we present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took. Hello and welcome to the news quiz, which comes this week from the British Council in Bazootoland. We start with an item heard on the food programme, read by Peter Donaldson.
Next week, we're going to be looking at the Rare Breed Survival Trust and tasting the results of their work.
Thank you, David Cook of Norwich, for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Ian Hislop. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Andrew Rawnsley. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from Kent Today, sent to us by Mrs. Jane Davison of New Ash Green.
Mr. Aitken's promotion to Treasury Chief Secretary was widely applauded on the back benches where he languished under Mrs. Thatcher.
Francis, your question, and the first one of the series, who lost his bearings out east before they went Dutch?
Why do I always get the difficult ones? I think this is that young British chap who ran away in Malaysia.
Liam Neeson.
And who was then taken to New York by The Word, that Channel 4 programme. But they wouldn't have him there, and now he's in Frankfurt for some reason. As Ian rightly says, he's almost called Liam Neeson, except that he's called Nick Leeson. And he's an absolute banker.
Yes. Well answered.
You know, they paid bonuses to all those people on the grounds of their expertise. I'm sure you'd pay them to go away to another company.
Well, it said in the Financial Times that they had to have the bonuses because they needed to be incentivised.
In order to lose that much money, yes.
This is the saga of bearings. They went bust with debts of over £800 million soon after trader Nick Leeson went into hiding in Malaysia. Markets nosedive at the news, with options in portable phones, white socks and red braces reaching all-time lows. It was Malaysia that also failed to find a 14-year-old boy who'd gone there using his father's passport. Things are getting ridiculous here, commented one expatriate, Mr. Lord Lucan. Ian, your turn for a question. Who's exclusively taking the Michael through the European court?
Who's taking the Michael through the European court?
Well, I could do it in another accent if you'd like.
What, Pakistani?
Yes.
Yes, this is Gerry Adams.
Of course it is.
I used to do a very good impression of him.
Go on, then.
This is Gerry Adams, obviously, who's taking the British government to the European Court of Human Rights for excluding him on the grounds that he might have been a terrorist. And knowing the European Court of Human Rights, they'll fine for him. They found for Ernest Saunders, didn't they?
Did they?
What good precedent.
Did they fine for Saunders?
Yes, they did. They found he had been to Ford Open Prison, which is now sort of twinned with Lourdes. Anyway, they're a very reliable court.
This question does refer to the Sinn Féin president, Gerry Adams, who is seeking damages from the government through the European court for excluding him from mainland Britain. At the same time, President Clinton hinted he's planning to invite Gerry Adams to a St. Patrick's Day's party at the White House, despite the possible damage to his credibility. But Gerry says he thinks he can handle it. Andrew, good to have you back on the programme. Your question is this. What powerful issue proved investments can go down as well as down?
We're talking about that rogue trader, John Major, who just went on a very speculative gamble in £4 billion worth of PowerGen and National Power shares. The difference, or perhaps it's the similarity with Bearings and Mr. Leeson, is once again it will come out of the public's pockets, and Mr. Major and the rest of the cabinet will all still get their bonuses. But anyway, those hoping for a nice juicy profit out of these shares have been denied it because the regulator, Professor Littlechild, has stepped in and says he's rejigging the entire market. He, of course, is, I think, the Director General of Power. And when they privatise further services, I suppose when British Rail is finally flogged off, we're then going to get off rail. And when they get round to privatising public lavatories, they're going to get, well, they're going to get a regulatory body that might sum up how most people feel about the government.
Professor Littlechild claims the timing was a coincidence, much in the same way it's a coincidence that Geoffrey Archer's wife happened to be a director of Anglia TV when he bought all those shares before they went up.
Oh, I think that's terribly fair.
And it's the sort of coincidence that holes in a cat's fur come just where its eyes are. However, government sources later admitted they did consider cancelling the share issue, but decided to go ahead after taking expert advice from a Mr. Leeson of Frankfurt. Alan, will you have a listen to this? That was Another One Bites the Dust by the Queen. By Queen.
Another one of her banks bites the dust.
Your question, Alan, is this. Who went doing the right thing to be replaced from the left, right and centre?
I thought we were having easy questions. I hoped it was because it was Freddie Mercury. This was going to be one about Freddie Starr. There were such wonderful names in the papers this week, weren't there? Like Little Child running electricity. And Cotshead being the gay gardener of Freddie Starr.
Right.
And I thought the Freddie Mercury must tie that in. This is Robert Hughes, not to be confused with the Great Aesthete. This is a chap whose wife is standing by him. Or behind him. Because Mr. Hughes has been in a legover crisis and is finally deciding very late to spend more time with his family. They always decide it afterwards, don't they? Minister for the People's Charter, which is where people have the right to a bit of everything that's going. And Mr. Hughes took that for himself. And he has been replaced by a man who was formerly a member of the Labour government, which just shows how deeply a barrel has to be scraped by Mr. Major.
He's amusingly called Mr. Horam. And the mistress is Miss Oates, but you believe me.
I was coming to Miss Oates, as indeed Mr. Hughes.
Oh, hello. Started early this series.
Unfortunately, Ian got in there first.
What was interesting about Mr. Hughes is that rather than wait for somebody to expose him in the newspapers, he exposed himself. Very curious. He was sort of own exclusive.
I was rather shocked. I mean, it was a man doing the decent thing. He obviously had no future as a minister at all.
This is Tory Minister Robert Hughes, who resigned after admitting he had an affair that ended last year, and some of the papers were asking why he waited until now. Actually, he wanted to go 6 months ago, but his name only just came to the top of the waiting list. And these some traditions stand firm, and the tradition at the News Quiz is that it's always 4-all after the first round, as indeed it is today. Francis, you're time for a question again. Who is building up his list by listing down our buildings?
Well, my guess is that this is something to do with listing of buildings. And my colleague here has written the word Derrick on it. And I think this is the National Heritage Secretary, Mr. Stephen Derrick, otherwise known as Doral by the literate among us.
Always got a savage tongue, hasn't he? That Francis Ween.
Well, the answer to your question is Stephen Doral. I don't think I'm at liberty to say any more about this, because he is still a minister, and we don't want to prod him into any sort of resignation by teasing him. There are so few ministers left.
He's asking the public what they think, isn't he?
Yes.
Probably.
Not something this government would be wise to do too often.
This is the news that English Heritage Secretary Stephen Doral is to consult the public as to which buildings should be listed. Mr. Doral's latest batch for consideration includes Centre Point, the Heinz Baked Bean Factory, Castrel House, and the works canteen of the Dagenham Penicillin Production Plant. So he's looking for a panel of judges who must like eating greasy food up a tower block while not feeling very well. Ian, who was called back for a second roasting on gas?
This is the chairman of British Gas.
Yes.
What is his name again? Derrick, probably.
Cedric.
Cedric Brown, who gets paid a very, very large amount of money a year. And he was brought up in front of this committee to explain why he earns this money. and he said something very amusing about how he worked harder than a junior hospital doctor. And that was such a good joke that he was brought back to see if he'd got any others. Now, I think he was brought back for not actually revealing that this vast salary includes some share options which he failed to declare at the time. So he's even richer than he was about 2 weeks ago.
There were some extra bonuses, but I've been struggling to fathom these adverts we've been seeing on the television about phone day and why we have to have an extra digit in the phone number, and there seems to be no explanation. And then it occurs to me, because we know the bosses of privatised utilities all have to be paid telephone numbers salaries.
Who told them what they can do with their extra digit?
This is about British Gas Chief Cedric Brown, who was called back to the Commons Select Committee to explain why he hadn't told them about share options that could add £500,000 to his annual salary of £475,000. During questioning about the value consumers get from British Gas, Mr. Brown appeared to be digging himself into a hole, at which point four of his men arrived in a van, put up a little tent and set about drinking tea for the rest of the day. Andrew, here's a piece of music for you.
It's Mr. Coxhead. Can I do it? It's got to be Mr. Coxhead.
No, it isn't. It isn't, actually, Alan.
I'm just teasing you.
Of course you are. You
what was that bit of music, Barry?
Well, for those of you with short memories, it was another chance to hear Another One Bites the Dust by Queen.
Ah.
And the question
touch of
Ernest
Saunders there. Completely forgotten.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Saunders. Who recognised the joke? Anyway, your question is, Andrew, whose run is over?
Oh, yeah, this is the manager of the England cricket team, whose name temporarily escapes me, because they change almost as often as government ministers. No, it's Keith Fletcher, isn't it, who's been bowled out, told to pull his stumps and all the other things prime ministers say to junior ministers when they have to leave.
I thought he'd been sacked.
The crease. Yes, he's been sacked, and now Ray Illingworth will have sort of supreme power, and so he can preside alone over further England cricketing disasters and take all the credit for it all by himself.
This is England cricket manager Keith Fletcher, who was sacked halfway through his five-year run. Let's face it, 5 years is a bit slow for one run. Even by England standards. Fletcher was on holiday when he was given his cards, and he dropped them. Alan, your question now. Who are toddling along to classy tests at the hothouse?
This is three-year-old children.
It is.
Apparently it's impossible to become a four-year-old child unless you take a test. So these little things are being plucked from the nipple and shoved in front of multiple-choice questions. Then they go straight to university and become unemployed. And the English education system, we select them out so that they can be failures earlier. That's about it.
I think you summed that up awfully. This is about three-year-olds having to take exams to secure places at nursery schools, a practice known as hothousing. The kids are asked such questions as, if Janet has six pencils and John has four, what have they got? Answer, they've got the entire purchase of this year's education budget for Greater Manchester. We start round three with a vicar's notice in the Transvaal Parish Magazine.
I shall be away for the next few Sundays. During my absence, the preachers will be found pinned on the church notice board. All marriages, births and deaths must be postponed until I return.
And thank you, Isabel Pagewood of Eastbourne, for that. Francis, why is it possible to tie a knot in the Brighton Pavilion but not in a Concorde?
Oh, dear. Do you know, I didn't read this story about the Brighton Pavilion. I just looked at the picture, gazed in admiration, but I'm rather hoping Ian might have read the story. I found the picture was worth 1,000 words, so I didn't bother to read the 1,000 words underneath it. There was a story about the Brighton Pavilion this week, but it eluded me. Oh. And
well, I read it.
I read
Ian
it.
Ian read it. Oh, there you are.
You can get married in the Brighton Pavilion now.
Yep.
Because it's not consecrated, but there's some bill gone through that if you pay, you can get married there.
Charles Brandon's responsible for this.
Is he?
He's brought in a bill to let people get married wherever they like. As long as they wear ridiculous pullovers.
And stand on their head.
I thought that was Basil Hume. You can get married to anything you like. If you're a Catholic, marry a ferret in Brighton Pavilion. Why should anywhere have to be consecrated when the forms of marriage most people are going through now, as I understand it, don't have to be consecrated at all? Why, you can get married on a bus. What's all that stuff about Concord? Can't you get married on Concord?
No, you can't, apparently, no.
Well, you won't have time to consummate it. You'll be in New York and back.
These are revised rules which will allow couples to marry other than in register offices, which means they can say, I do, and then kiss each other in unusual places. The change means that civil marriages could be held in royal castles, but a palace spokesman seemed confused, saying, what is a civil marriage? Ian, will you have a listen to this? Hold Me by P.J. Provey. The question is, who learnt how to hold politically correctly, even though they don't hold politically?
Now, this is the Greens.
It is.
It's a story which was headed PC Hugs, which I noticed is rather shocking. Usually PCs are smacking you in the face and they're using the moment. The Green Party have decided you can't hug people normally anymore. You have to have a politically correct hug, which means you go up to them and say, good evening, and put your hand round their shoulders without invading their personal space.
And they've invented a new hug where you hold out your right hand and the other person holds out their right hand and you then embrace your hands.
It's called the handshake.
Yes.
No wonder they never get any votes nowadays. Anyway, I'm going to hug Francis now in a politically correct manner.
And jolly nice of
Now we're getting married by the Catholic Church.
But they had to do it because their conference had been disrupted. It was at their conference this week, and they said last year's conference was a disaster because all the delegates kept hugging and snogging all the way through the debates. That's why they had to invent it, because they couldn't hear any of the speeches, because the speakers had someone else's tongue down their throat at the time.
So it sounds just like a Tory conference, in fact, doesn't it?
This was the Green Party conference, where they learnt to greet each other in a politically correct fashion. This is in preparation for the next election, when they're expected to be differently successful. Delegates were shown which parts of the female body are acceptably used for hugs. They also got a fair idea of which male parts are best used to describe their conference. Andrew, your time for a question now. Why is the boot being put crisply into Mr. Nice Guy?
Oh, this is Gary Lineker.
It is.
Who's taken a large sum of money, though perfectly legally, we should immediately make clear, for a sort of free transfer to Walker's Crisps, where he can be seen satirising his own image by stealing some crisps from a little boy. But there have been lots of complaints that this is appalling and it should be taken off and don't want to see it happening anymore.
That's right. It's all about Gary Lineker, who, as a footballer, was never booked, and anyone who's seen his acting will understand why. Bit unfair. That's unfair.
Come that's on. Unfair.
Even from an Arsenal supporter, that's unfair.
I think the kid with the bag of crisps was jolly lucky they didn't give him Eric Cantona.
And with that, we move to your question, Alan. Who's feeling a little désolé with his boss in the Grande Pomme?
He's an Englishman, another Englishman who gets millions of pounds for doing sod all, this time in America, where he's employed by Frenchmen. And the Frenchman, who, outraged by the fact that this Englishman allegedly doesn't do anything at all, makes jokes about the English. And this man, of course, because he's in America, is taking the Frenchman to court for billions of pounds for infringing his personal space and all those other things, and making racist jokes, like you English lay about, and, and clever little things the Frenchman says, but they gave a list of the jokes in the Telegraph. They didn't seem bad at all compared with what they normally say about the frogs.
I mean, the rudest was, what's the definition of heaven? A German chauffeur, an English butler, an Italian lover, and a French cook. And hell was having an Italian driver, a French butler, and an English lover and cook.
How did you remember that?
Can we sue you for telling that joke?
Well, he's suing for 20 million, so we ought to be entitled to at least half a million for that.
Yeah, I feel harassed by Rawnsley telling that sort of joke.
Yeah.
I feel as though Demi Moore's just jumped on me.
You lucky devil.
Just fantasising wildly.
I thought the French butler was a prosthetic device.
So half
a dozen of those French butlers. Shall I put him in a bag? No, I'll have him.
This refers to Russell Deakin, a British banker based in New York, who is suing his French boss for making jokes and insulting comments about English stereotypes. Mr. Deakin was sacked after being accused of being a thief. How dare they suggest a British banker working abroad? We have come to the end of yet another round, and the scores at the end of this round are still tied at 12 all.
Thank you.
Before we start the final round, here's an item from the Birmingham Post.
One of the mistresses of disgraced TSB boss Graham Doughty says the bank will have difficulty in recovering some of the cash he stole because she invested it in £5,000 worth of breast implants. Last night, a spokesman for the TSB said, "These things are in the hands of our solicitors."
Francis, here's a piece of music for you. Question is, who was caught with the shorts and got short shrift in court?
It's C&A. Some boss of C&A went on holiday to the Far East and bought a pair of designer shorts, which, as these things are these days, was covered in mysterious slogans. It said sort of flame on and boogie on down. I don't know. This jive talk that young people have these days. I expect it said rock and roll or something.
Flame on, that's awfully good.
And he came back and sent it off to their tailors in Sri Lanka. Turns out CNA make their shorts in Sri Lanka. And said, could you reproduce these? And he forgot to say, of course, leave off the slogans because they're all copyright. So they sent back a lot of short shorts covered in flame on or whatever it was. And he's just been sued for breach of copyright for nicking this very heavily copyrighted phrase, which you're about to tell me. I think it was something like,
good evening.
Enough respect, I expect it said, something like that.
This is about High Street Store CNA, who were fined £400 for selling fake designer shorts by Cheltenham magistrates. CNA copied expensive American, here it comes, no fear, dangerous sports gear shorts.
I told you.
Yes.
No fear, dangerous sports gear. That's pathetic.
Well, it is. That was
I like enough respect.
And I'd flame up, or whatever it's
called. Flame on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ian, how have one's chips gone to the dogs?
Royal family? One's...
Yes.
One's chips.
The Queen?
Yep.
We've had that record. Where are we?
Cocker Spaniels.
Cocker Spaniels eating
British
chips.
Council,
very big story, I saw it.
Any more clues?
No, just answer it.
All right. It's the Queen's Cocker Spaniels, which have been given barcodes. This is true. Two of her Cocker Spaniels have had silicon chips implanted in them so that when they run off, you just get out your scanner and they come beaming back somehow. But the really striking thing about them is that they're called Oxo and Bisto, these royal dogs, which struck me as a bit downmarket, really, for the richest woman in the land. So and her dog's Oxo, but you know, they've probably got other ones called Pot Noodle.
What do you do? Just like a television remote control? You just press it and the dog blows up on it.
It's not a barcode. I mean, it would be a bugger going through Waitrose. Take your spaniel and it costs you £437 to relate.
Six dogs or less.
Imagine the girl holding the dog up by the scruff of the neck.
How much a spaniel, Doreen?
It refers to Queen Spaniels that have been fitted with electronic microchips in case they go astray. Her Majesty has also asked if Fergie could be fitted with one of the devices. A buzzer will sound if she ever gets lost and everyone will go out and start celebrating. Now then, Andrew, whose new small car is a pain in the elbow?
This is Nigel Mansell. This is a great story. They produced this fabulous new machine for him to drive in Formula One, except they made it with the cockpit a bit too small for him. So as a result, he feels like he's driving along at 250 miles an hour, but in a Robin Reliant, because he's squashed like this, and he's complaining that his elbows have got bruised. Mind you, I'd have thought if you hurtle around Grand Prix circuits at 200, 250 miles per hour, bruising your elbows is probably the least of the dangerous to life. And
otherwise they call it an elbow pit.
Yes, this refers to racing driver Nigel Mansell, who's making a return to Formula One to resume his winning ways.
Oh, I can't get into the car.
Nigel's McLaren
team... That's awfully good. Is he Welsh?
Formula One cars have bald tyres, no lights, will be totally illegal on public roads and can only be used for racing. Unless you're a minicab driver, of course. Alan, who thinks hands that do porridge should feel soft as your face?
It's an extremely sad story, given the present penal climate. And most of them don't even have to stay in there. The only man left in this particular prison, it's called Highgrove or something like that, is suing the prison authorities because he works in the prison laundry. And having washed these sheets he intended to slide down, he found that he couldn't slide down because his hands hurt. Anyway, the washing powder he uses in the laundry has made him come out in blisters. And he's very upset. It's not why he knocked over the Midland Bank. And he's suing them. And they're going to give him either rubber gloves or something else you have in prison.
French butlers.
What do you do with rubber gloves? Yes, French butler and a pair of rubber gloves. That'll see me through for the next 4 years. His name is Keane. Mr. Keane.
He's suing over his haircut as well now. Have you seen that?
Is he? Oh,
yeah, he's issued another writ because he was made to wait a week for a haircut, and he's suing for the distress this caused him having to live with his old haircut. He's a very, very sensitive man, this Mr. Keane. But he is actually a football hooligan by trade, I think. Well known for their sensitivity.
Is it the same man? Isn't it a different man?
No.
There's only one man in prison.
Yes.
I mean, the whole country. Group four are currently looking for the others. I mean, if he had somebody to talk to, he'd be all right. He wouldn't worry about his hands and his haircut. There's no one there. Solitary confinement in the entire prison. Nothing to do all day.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you a cutting for us?
Yes, I have, Barry. It's from the radio listings in the Sunday Times, and it says 8:50 p.m. 90 not out. Mary Ellis, the distinguished actress and singer, recalls the highs and lows of her 94 years in conversation with Ned Sherrin.
Ian.
Yes, this was in the Telegraph. The author, Dame Barbara Cartland, has discovered that she is on the censors list in the Republic of Ireland. The book in question is a 1956 opus, Marriage for Moderns, which she wrote as a manual for new wives. She said, "It's all coming back to me now. I couldn't be bothered with that book, so I had a male researcher write it. There are sections on contraception I would never have inserted myself."
Thus continuing this week's theme. Andrew,
this is a clipping from The Guardian. After being charged £20 for a £10 overdraft, 30-year-old Michael Howard of Leeds changed his name by deed poll to Yorkshire Bank PLC, Our Fascist Bastards. The bank has now asked him to close his account, and Mr. Bastards has asked them to repay the 69p balance by cheque made out in his new name.
Alan. Oh, by an amazing coincidence, I have got a new name, one too.
Good heavens, Alan.
It's one from the Salisbury Chronicle. What should have been a happy family occasion was marred by a scuffle which broke out last Sunday at the font of Hampton Courtney Parish Church, when 84-year-old Barry Wicks intervened in the christening of his great-grandson. Attempting to snatch the baby from the Reverend James Donoghue, Mr. Wicks shouted that he'd not spent 6 years fighting a war for this sort of thing to happen. He was restrained and led from the church by relatives. The ceremony continued, and the baby was duly christened Adolf.
Let's look at the final score. Well, it's easy. This is a 16-all a draw. Well done to all of you. Oh. Before we leave you, here's a cutting sent by Lorraine Dexter of Clwyd.
A 999 call to police should have caught burglars red-handed as they raided a village shop, but the gang fled with cigarettes and postage stamps worth £1,500 after police phoned back to check the burglars were still there.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Ian Hislop and Andrew Rawnsley. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson.